Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's good, Fatherhood? It's your boy, James Lopez of the Fatherhood is Lit podcast. And before we start our talk today, I want to say thank you for subscribing, rating, and sharing the podcast. It makes me feel so dope knowing that you guys are getting value from this. So many of you know that I was raised in the South Bronx, birthplace of hip hop. But what you might not know is that hip hop actually saved my life. It saved my life because it showed me that there was a different world for people like me, for black and brown boys out there that were being raised in poverty. So today's a special episode for me. Today I'm talking to a dad who I respect tremendously, who's actually out there helping his son become the future when it comes to rap and hip hop. What's good, Mike Loco?
Hey, how's it going, man? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Mike, where are you representing from, bro?
Staten Island, Shaolin, man, the one and only.
Shaolin, the forgotten borough, bro. How does it feel knowing that you could put on for your borough like that when everybody else forgot about us?
I mean, it's always great to rep your city. I mean, at the end of the day, you just want to make an impact, and if it brings light to the city you're from, you know, you got to represent your hometown. So, you know, it feels real good doing something like that.
Facts. So how many kids you got, bro?
I got four.
Four kids? And what are they, boys, girls, mix?
Three boys, one girl.
Nice. So, yeah, man. So, you know, I wanted to talk to you because there's a lot of people out there that their kids want to become rappers, singers, artists, whatever, something in the music industry, right? And a lot of the times we kill those kids' dreams, right? You're actually one of those dudes that's investing in his child, that's investing in his come up, right? So thank you once again for being here.
Yeah, you know, like one mistake people make is they follow those patterns. Like, oh, okay, the jobs that are successful, lawyers, doctors, and this, that, and the third. If someone doesn't have the passion to do that, A, you shouldn't push them into a profession like that, because if they're not natural healers and you push them to be a doctor, they could potentially kill somebody because their heart's not in it. You know what I mean? And if they're representing a case and they're not really in it, and just because your kid's good at arguing with you doesn't mean they should be a lawyer, you know, because they're going to defend someone's case, you know, and it's like, if they're not really into that, just because the salary is right doesn't mean it's the right career for them.
Yep, true.
You got to embark on what the passion that you see in your child is and stop worrying about status quo, about, okay, well, I grew up hard and I want to make sure my kid doesn't grow up hard, and we want to change those things. And yeah, that's true to an extent, but you got to find what really talks to your child and whatever it is. And that could change 5-6 times over the course of, you know, from them going from adolescent years to young adults. You got to nurture it. And at the same time, just offer guidance and give them backup plans. You can have the safety net, but at the end of the day, what they're going to excel at is what they really want to wake up to. They're not going to hit that snooze button because they're excited about it. That's what any job, that goes with anyone. You know, like, you want to be able to wake up and be excited about what you're doing, or at least be content at what you're doing.
I mean that's exact, you know, I think that's perfect. That's exactly correct, right? But for me, it's like being raised in poverty, right? Being raised in the South Bronx. If I had told my dad, yo, I want to be like Biggie, right? I want to go out there and create a super dope track like Hypnotize or something, right? He would have told me, finish high school and get your ass to the army or go to college. I'm not helping you with this hip hop stuff. So what made you say, all right, I'm going to sacrifice my career and actually help my child?
Belief, man. I had belief. Like, he showed talent, you know, and he showed perseverance. He showed dedication. And it was like, all right, if you really want to do this, we're going to do it right. And I had a long talk with him of what's entailed and what needs to be done. And this can't just be like a hobby. You know, you have to distinguish what's a hobby and what's really like a passion and a dream and what's really could be put the right effort to. Mm-hmm. You know, so when he came at it, like, you know, he rocked for a year, you know, and I was like, you know, let him take his lumps and see where it goes. Make sure it's not another one of those fads.
Wait, so he went out there and he tried it on his own for about a year before you actually committed your time to it?
I mean, I was watching, but from afar.
Okay.
You know, because I feel the best lessons aren't going to be preached to, because, I mean, we can all relate. How many times we had someone tell us something and we didn't pay no mind until we learned it on our own?
Yep.
You know, so for about 9 months to a year, I was watching and I would give him some advice. And, you know, but I didn't get too involved because I wanted to see if he would get discouraged. So he went, did a couple of shows. He got scanned for some money on some of the shows. And, you know, he put some music out and he got some, you know, good reviews. And he wasn't discouraged. Like, he put his own money out there. He lost it. You know, it was a scam show. Mm-hmm. But it didn't knock him down. It just made him hungrier. And it's like, how can you deny that? You know, usually, you know, you take a 17-year-old kid and he takes $300 and he doesn't get it back. And he finds out it was for nothing that he got ripped off. They're going to get discouraged quick. You know, that's a big downfall. So it's like, people don't realize the validity in that. Like, this kid just lost $300. That's almost a 2 weeks of paycheck for him, you know, working at a BS job. And so he put his hard-earned cash, and he took it in stride. He said, you know what? I'm not going to let that defeat me. I'm just going to learn from it. And right there is where I was like, all right, now we're going to sit down and talk. Now that I've seen you take your lumps and you're really serious about this, I'm gonna be just as serious, if not more serious, and support everything you do. And I've always supported everything my kids want to do. Because like I said, it's like you got to nurture those dreams, even if they're pipe dreams. You got to nurture them a little bit. You can't just say, you know what, I grew up in the project, I grew up tough, I don't know where my next meal is coming from, so you have to live like this. They're not robots. They got free will, they got their own minds, they got imagination. Just because they come from you, they're not you. And that's the mistake we make as fathers a lot, is that we expect our kids to be just like us. Yeah, and they can be similar to us, but they can't be just like us, because there's only one of us. We're all unique in our own way.
I mean, I think it's also it goes back to like the whole LeBron James thing, where he said, you know, the worst thing he did was name his son Junior, right? Where now his son has high expectations. Like, people have high expectations of him to become the next LeBron. And he's like, man, that's so much pressure. You know, I just want him to be great. He doesn't have to be me.
Hey, that's why I named my son Miguelito. Mm-hmm. Because it's not Junior, but it still means Little Mike.
Yeah, yeah. That is true. So, so what you did was you basically sat down, watched him do his thing for a year, watched him take his lumps, and then that sort of proved to you that he was serious about the game? Is that what it was? Like, you wanted to see that he was serious?
Like, I knew he was serious, but I wanted to make sure, based on his history, you know what I mean? Everyone's going to have their own history. Like, he's gotten into a couple of things before, and it's like, he was excited about it, and then it was a phase. And then after a few months, it passed. You know, and I supported all of them. So it's like, it was just the same thing. It was like, all right, he's getting into this, but let's see what he wants to do. And being that I've worked in the industry before, and I know what it's entailed, I was like, I wanted to make sure that this is what he really wanted to do, and it wasn't just a phase. The minute I knew he was serious, all bets were off, bro. We were going at it hardcore, and I'm going to support. Like, it could have been anything, bro. He could have been... He wanted to knit sweaters, and he was really passionate about knitting sweaters with funky designs. Like, I was going to support it.
Yeah. So do you consider yourself like a father / manager when it comes to his music career?
When it comes to business, I'm a manager. I'm a CEO of an entertainment company. Mm-hmm. When we're not doing business, then I'm the father. I try not to cross the worlds, because I don't want to be like that dad coach.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I represent other artists that aren't my children. So they got to be treated in the same respect. Because if we give them some kind of favoritism, or we tend to put too much pressure on them because of the connection, we're setting them up for unrealistic beliefs.
That's crazy, though. That has to be hard, though. Like, that has to be really hard to be able to come into, like, a whole crew and say, yo, this is my son, right? This is the crew. I'm going to treat all of y'all equally. Because I'm the type that... I might treat my son a little bit harder, where it's like, yo, like, you have me at your disposal. You know me. Don't mess this up. Like, let's work. While the rest of them, I might just say, yo, guys, either you're going to work or you're going to have to leave. You know what I mean? So how do you balance that out? Like, how do you balance that love for everybody?
Because business has nothing to do with family. Mm-hmm. And we have to make sure that we don't cross that line. And I mean, we're all guilty of it sometimes. Sometimes there's going to be that you could do better, harder thing. But I make sure that I treat everyone the same, because it's important, because you're sending a message that, like, if I'm not going to be around forever. So case in point is if his career has to get turned over to someone else, I don't want him to be used to certain leisures or certain pressure, whether it's good or bad, because that's all going to change the minute he's not in a camp with his father or anything like that. Like, I'm doing him a disservice by treating him differently as my son, by not treating him like everyone else, because the minute he's either signed to a major label or he moves on to a different camp and I retire, or whatever the case may be, whatever separates me from the game, he's not going to know how to handle it with someone else, because he's only going to know how to handle it from that father-son perspective. And as a father, we have to prepare our children for the world, not just to deal with us.
Yeah, true.
So that's a major issue that, like, some people tend to not really capitalize on and understand. It's like you can't set them up to always be answering to dad or trying to make, you know, mom and dad happy or whatever the case may be. You have to set them up for the world.
Yeah, it's almost like you're saying you can't baby them. You can't baby them. You gotta treat them like adults.
But at the same time, you also can't be super hard on them, because, you know, it's like, how many times you've been to a Little League game and you see the dads are coaching, they're super hard on their kids, and all of a sudden that kid don't want to play baseball no more.
Or they hate their parents.
That kid don't want to play football no more.
Or they hate their parents. You know? Like, don't bring them here no more.
Yeah, you know, like, so it's like, in order to have that true bond, you got to have the natural bond with your kids before anything. You know what I mean? The respect has to be there. The love has to be there. So that way, when you go into any kind of endeavor, whether it's a sport or a business thing, you can establish neutral ground and say, all right, listen, we're going to enter this, but we're not entering this as family. We're entering this as two individuals that have a goal and a game plan and a strategy. And you do things like that and you separate it from the relationship aspect of it, you could be proud in the moments that you need to be proud. That there's moments where you can be a dad. Mm. And then there's moments where you just got to be your government names and you got to handle what needs to be handled. Yeah. And you could separate the two and kind of merge the best of both worlds. Bro, it's a lethal weapon.
Let's go back, man, because this is deep right here. You said you have to have those conversations of basically letting them know, like, when we walk in the building, it's not father-son no more. Now we're in here handling business, right? Does that happen the first conversation, the second conversation, or is this something that just goes on for life when it comes to business and fatherhood together?
But it's got to be that first conversation, because if how you start it is going to set the premise and the foundation for everything you want to do.
Okay.
So if you go into it kind of babying them or, you know, being super hard on them or whatever, you're already setting a shaky foundation. If you go into it with the right mindset and you say, listen, we're going to be a team. It's going to be like, you know, listen, we already have the bond, but it's going to be a brotherhood or a friendship more so than father son, because first of all, nepotism doesn't really work as well as people think, you know, and a lot of people can hold that against you that you're related, because then they'll be like, oh, you know,
you're biased.
He's only making that progress because that's your son. If you were pushing me as hard as him and da da da, like, it creates other problems outside, you know, it creates ripples.
Yeah.
No matter what. But the minute, like, people know, all right, listen, he's not calling me dad in these meetings or anything like that, or when we're out and doing things, like, he's calling me loco. You know, and people have to respect that. Like, listen, he messes up, you mess up, it's gonna be the same. He does good, you do good, it's gonna be the same. And it's an even playing field. Now, our off business hours, you know, you're gonna have those certain talks and you're gonna have to, you know, explain. It's just like, think about it like this. Your kid does something wrong. He gets you mad. You yell at him. You punish him. But then a half hour later, you go back in there, or at least in my belief, you go back in there and say, listen, I love you. Just because I was hard on you doesn't change that. But you messed up. This is what, you know, where it was. You give him a hug, but then he still serves his punishment. You don't let him off punishment. You have to be stern but fair. Mm-hmm. And you have to establish that the care is still there. But you got to also let them know, like, they can't mess up. They can't do certain things, and they're not going to be treated differently because the world's not going to treat them differently.
Yep.
You know, and I think that's a strong core family value to instill. Like, you can't just punish your kid and then let him off, because then he's going to be like, damn, dad's always so strict. Dad's always doing this and a third. But it's like they lose sight of the fact of what they did wrong in the first place and just push all the blame on you. So by being that way, you're teaching them to take accountability and to take, you know, the cause of their own actions.
Yep.
Like, if I wouldn't have stayed out past curfew, this would have never happened. So it's not, oh, dad's mean, dad's punishing me, dad's strict. It's like, damn, you know, I was supposed to be home at 7:30. I came home at 8. That half hour wasn't worth this. Like, I disappointed him. You know, so it starts there. So the same thing with, we're going to go into this business. Listen, I can't treat you no differently than any other artist. This is based off of talent. You being my bloodline does not make you great. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be great as an individual. So being related to me is not going to automatically make you great.
So now with the greatness aspect of it, right? Like, you know, keeping it all the way real, like, has there been a time, especially for us, like, we come from an older school, right, where we had the Biggies and the Tupacs of the world. You know, we had the Wu-Tangs of the world, right? Music has completely changed. So has there been a time when you sat with Migs and told him, yo, this ain't it? And how did he take it, and how did you move forward with it?
Oh, well, there's been a couple of times where, like, he's wrote a song and recorded a reference track, and I'm like, the structure was no good, or I didn't like a hook or whatever. And I would give him constructive criticism, but and it's explained to him, like, listen, I'm not being hard on you, and I'm not expecting you to be better because of who you are, or that you're my son. This is, you know, I reiterate the fact that, like, I would do this to anyone. And he's seen me do it to other people. You know, he's seen me do the same thing with my other artists when we sit down and go over a track. Like, and I explained to him, listen, you know, if this was at Bad Boy, or if this was at Def Jam, or if this was at Warner Brothers, they're going to do this. If not, and they're actually going to do it a little bit harder and stricter. They're just going to be like, nope, scrap it, do it again.
Shut it down.
You know, shut it down. It's very, and I've sat at the table, you know, like when I worked at Def Jam, and I've seen major artists, established artists, come in with a new reference track and they lay it down. And I've seen, like, people just, like Kevin Lyles, like, nope, go back, this ain't it. And they don't even give you the courtesy of an explanation. You know, they're just like, nope, this ain't going to do well. Just scrap this, or it's got to be changed. You got to do something different. You know, so when he sat there, and if it's something that I don't believe is 100%, it could be good. But if it's 80%, I know that there's 20% missing, and 20% can make it better and put out 100% a whole product, I'm going to let it be known. And it's he's going to know it. And sometimes, you know, in the beginning, he got a little, his feathers were ruffled, you know, obviously, because, you know, it's a two-way street. So the kid has to be able to separate the dad from the business as well. And that's a lot harder for them.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know, oh, you know, dad's just being hard on me. Like, no, you know, and eventually they're going to see and learn that this is what it takes. No matter what the business is, you can't create shortcuts. You can't empathize and like you said, baby them, because you're setting them up to fail with the next person or the next level.
Yeah. So how do you get them? How do you get them comfortable? Right. Comfortable. Or how does a dad stay comfortable enough to say, I'm going to turn this into a teaching moment, instead of, like, let's say, for example, Migs tells you, dad, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Like, your music is from the 80s. My music is lit. This is the time. Right. So how do you go from, listen, son, like, this is not about me being your father. This is about your career. And I know your music is different, but this one piece can be super valuable if we work on it. Like, how do you keep your cool?
Oh, no. Like, there's been times where it's that line's been crossed, and you just got to, again, when you get those situations, you got to revisit it and revisit it soon to... Well, I hate to use the word damage control,
but you don't want it to linger.
Those moments,
you don't want it to linger. Like, right?
You know, yeah, you don't want it to linger, and you don't want that bad taste to be left in, like, to even create that seed of thinking, oh, he's just dadding me right now. You know, you have to really establish it, like I said, from the beginning and going forward. And I also have the credentials to back up what I'm talking about. So when he sits there, and if he ever said, like, there was one time for specific, he sat there, he's like, you know, you're just being tough on me. I was like, no, listen. And I broke down a lot. I showed him everything. I showed him demographics, statistically. I taught him about, you know, like, since we're talking about music, things being aesthetically pleasing to the ear, sound waves, compressions. Like, there's a lot of technical talk that comes involved with music that the basic fan has no idea of. You know, and it's like, all right, now he's like, all right, hold up, Dad. All right, you're saying a lot of, you know, high level shit that like I wasn't even expecting to come out your mouth. Like, all right, clearly you know what you're talking about, and I'm sorry. You know what I mean? And it's like, all right, good. We got past that. We understand. You know, I know what I'm talking about, and we can also test it. And I was like, if you really feel that 100% sure that this is the track, and you don't want to make no changes, that's fine. Put it out.
Yep.
Put it out and learn. Reap your own, you know, what you sell. And if it doesn't do well or you get bad feedback, remember what I told you.
Yeah, and then from there, keep it moving, right? Keep it moving and let's keep working on the craft.
You know, and in the beginning, like I said, he had people that were like doing him favors and, you know, not really great produced records. You know, the quality wasn't as good. And he sees the difference from then till now. Mm-hmm. You know, and so actions speak louder than words. So the words can complicate things at times, but at the end of the day, statistics and, you know, the quality of things, that can't be changed. That's there. And once you put a song out, I mean, you could delete it, but people heard it already. And you only have one chance at a first impression.
Yep, and then that's it.
You know, so, and that's one of the main selling points. It's like, you know what? You really think it's this good of a track? Let's get a test group. Let's get 20 people over here right now. And let's let all 20 of them hit a song and you ask them all each individually their thoughts and things. And if I'm wrong, it'll be explained when these 20 people give you their opinions. And it can't be 20 yes men. It's got to be 20 people that aren't going to be afraid to tell you the truth.
Ooh, how do you even get like that? That's so tough, man. Like, how do you even get your son or even any artist, right, to be able to say, all right, I'm going to listen to this critique and I'm not going to go bonkers. Like, I'm not going to try to fight somebody, especially when they're so young. You know, 18-year-old is 17, 18, 19-year-old. They're ready to sometimes throw down.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
That's the difference between someone trying to be a rapper and someone trying to be an artist.
Mm-hmm. So what's the difference?
It's different. All right. For me, someone who says, oh, yeah, I'm a rapper, I can rap, they're not taking the game serious. They're trying to record one or two songs, throw it on SoundCloud, and then they're going to sit in their living room and play Fortnite and wait for the internet to make them famous and try and use it like a scratch-off lottery ticket.
Mm-hmm. Trying to go viral.
Okay. Yeah, you know, and then because they don't want to get up and go out and get a job. So they're like, you know what? Because nowadays, I don't know how many people I run into. Like, it's different. When we were kids, bro, you didn't meet a lot of people that said, oh, I'm trying to be a clothing designer. Oh, I'm trying to get into music. It wasn't as current as it is now.
Yeah.
Like, now you can't walk down the block without running into 15 people that want to be an entrepreneur and claim that they, you know, they're going to do a clothing brand, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. They want to make beats or they want to make music. It's very common. It's very trendy.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is that you take those same people and say, okay, what's your game plan? What's your strategy? What are you doing to really get yourself out there? And they don't have an answer. Those are people that are just doing it because they want to try and get rich quick.
Because it was the
cool
thing.
And the business, you know, it's just cool, yeah. And they're doing it because they want to, you know, bag a few girls or, you know, they want to impress their friends. And they're not really about going there. To see, one of the major keys to success is, first of all, success isn't a value. Success is a mindset. If you're happy, then most likely you're successful. It doesn't matter what your bank account shows. The second thing is if you're willing to get out of your comfort zone.
Yep.
If you want to be comfortable, then that means you're not willing to make sacrifices. You're not willing to do things that are required to get the goal that you set forth. If your goal is happiness, but you're not willing to bend in your ways, you're probably not going to end up happy. That's why there's people with a lot of money that are very, very unhappy because mm-hmm. they're not willing to go out of their comfort zone, but they just manage to fall on the right food chain to establish a good income.
Yep.
Income doesn't determine success. Income doesn't determine, you know, your mindset. And when you get someone that's really taking it serious, they're going to take those critiques. They're going to learn to be comfortable while they're uncomfortable because they understand it's part of how the world works. It's part of, you know, any business that you're in. You know, if you go to a job, no matter what, and you even, let's say you're working at Wendy's and you burn the fries, now you're going to have a situation. The manager's going to be like, you just wasted food. You burn fries. It's lunch hour. That's an uncomfortable situation.
Yeah. Yeah,
the regular high-headed kid is going to be like, fuck you, I quit. Because then I think in the long term, like, yo, I got to pay my cell phone bill. I got this bill. I got that bill. You know what? Let me just shut up. I messed up. I burnt the flies. Let me take this little bit of flack, keep my mouth shut, and worry about my paycheck and worry about my responsibilities. Where the hothead is just going to be like, F this, I'm out.
Yep.
And it's the same thing. Like, as simple as that sounds, it's the same mindset with anything that you do. If you're not willing to take the negatives with the positives, you're not going to succeed.
Yeah.
You're not, because you're always just going to have that effort attitude, and you can't get far with that effort attitude.
No, it's true. It's true. So now you as the dad, right? Like, you guys have been, man, I've seen you guys everywhere, bro. Like, I've seen you on Hot 97. I think the other day you guys were like in, I don't know if it was Phoenix or Vegas or something like that, performing. I think it was maybe like a month ago. It was somewhere out of town. You know, you guys are traveling all over the place. So is that Migs putting in work to get interviewed or to get shows, or is that more on you, on the dad, the manager side?
Migs provides the talent. Yeah. I provide shopping the talent.
The opportunities.
You know, I get the opportunities, and honestly, some of the opportunities come just off of the exposure. So the groundwork that I set, you know, it starts opening them up. It gets them in front of more eyes and ears. And then the branding, the marketing, like the content that we put out and everything else, you know, after a while, that starts to work for itself, mm-hmm. you know, and the talent's being heard. But I definitely got to, I got to plant that seed as well. Like, that's where my job comes in. He makes the music. He does well. I got to advise him on content. I got to advise him on marketing. I have to pitch him to different people. I have to make those emails. I have to do the cold messaging. And what I mean by cold messaging, because I don't want to just assume your listeners know what I mean. When we use the terms cold and hot, hot is when you have a good relationship already and you can message someone and they know who you are. Okay. Cold is not knowing them from Adam. You don't know them from a hole in the wall and you just throw a message out there. How can that message come across where they actually pay attention and read past the first few lines? You know, so you have no relationship with them, so that's considered a cold lead. That's a cold contact. And then you make it warm and you heat it up as you build the relationship. And if you're afraid of no, that's going to hold you back. If you're afraid of being ignored, that's going to hold you back. And that's where my job comes into heavily, because I don't care about the word no. I don't care if someone ignores me, because if I email this person and they don't pay attention, I email 10 other people just like him. Yeah. You know, so it's going to eventually happen. And then, you know, we sat there and said, listen, if we want to be taken seriously, the number one rule is, if you aren't willing to invest in yourself, how do you expect other people to invest in you?
And they won't. They won't, so, if you don't.
And that's another reason why I say the term, you know, people that just, you know, make a song or two, and an artist. You know, you could be a hip-hop artist, you can be a rap artist, you can be an R&B artist. The word artist has to be in there because it's your craft. It's what you're doing. And if you're not willing to go out there and understand, okay, listen, I just recorded this song and I put it on SoundCloud. I have no idea what I'm doing with music, but yet still have the capacity to think that they're going to pay you to perform at a show when no one knows who you are, you're delusional.
Yep.
And you know, so you got to go through the proper channels. And then a lot of, you know, you got to know where my job comes into play is knowing which shows are worth paying to perform for in the beginning of his career.
Time out. We gotta take that back right there. You just said mm-hmm. which shows to pay for in the early career.
Yeah, so, in the beginning.
So that means that you as an artist, you have to pay to perform?
Yes, sir.
Instead of the other way around. See, I think a lot of people don't know that. Like, I think a lot of people think, yo, you know, you rap, you get put on. All you're doing is making money. Even after you do an interview, you know, you land an interview with Breakfast Club, yo, shit is golden after that. And that's not true.
But you got to get to that point.
But that's not necessarily true. Like an interview or a sit down with, even like you go on Sway in the Morning and you drop a hot freestyle, that doesn't guarantee you're going to make some money. So what you're telling me is that sometimes even when you do a performance, you got to pay.
Yeah. And in the very beginning, this is how it goes. You want to make music. All right, cool. You put out a couple of tracks. You put it out there. First thing you got to do is find out what it is to be an artist, how to get all your royalties and to make sure all your pennies are getting pulled back in. So you want to register with your ASCAP, your BMI. That's your PRO. Then from there, you want to make sure that you're getting your songwriter royalties and your mechanical royalties. So now you need to get, you know, your song trust or your TuneCore, and things like that. And then you want to get your copyrights going. And there's a lot of legal stuff that goes into play to make sure that you're covered everywhere. And then you want to get on SoundExchange, because SoundExchange covers your internet plays. But then you got to have your publishing in order to make sure that the SoundExchange can kick in, because without publishing, they're not really going to kick you nothing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of this legal stuff and everything that has to get into it that the common kid just goes and records a song and puts it on SoundCloud and has no idea of. So that's first and foremost. Then from there, as a promoter now, if you were booking a show and some random person comes up to you and says, yo, I got a hot song, and he shows you the song and you like the song, but he's got no following, no streams, and you put him on a flyer, is anyone going to pay for a ticket to come see this person that no one knows?
Probably not. The high chance that they will not come. Yeah.
Absolutely not. So in the beginning, it's to get your exposure. There's a lot of these showcases and everything else, and you pay a slot fee and you go and perform, you know, or there'll be some organizations that'll bring a bigger artist in that already has a name, and they'll offer opening slot fees, and you got to pay to open for that artist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it looks great, social media content, you know, and it's a flex and all that. It shows you working. But at the end of the day, you still got to pay for this, because as a promoter, you're paying for that venue. You want to sell tickets. And in today's day and age, there's no such thing as a promoter anymore. You know, there's people that have been throwing shows for 10 years in New York. And if they throw, okay, so-and-so Productions presents this showcase, and they don't put any artists on it, they're not selling a single ticket. They make everything off the back of the artists. And it's not right. It's not how it should be. It should be, as a promoter, you're known for having lit shows and picking good artists. But because of the way New York has become so money motivated, and hip hop is such a profitable business that people can exploit, it makes it that much harder for these artists.
Wow.
So, and the opportunities,
performances, good Lord,
the opportunities are very slim. We were blessed that we only did a couple of pay-to-performs, and then we said, you know what? We want people to respect us and take us seriously, so we booked our own show.
You mean we built ourselves as headliners.
We put production value into the show. This is something you won't see at a showcase. You walked into our show, there was Truss on the stage. We had Pars cans. We had a lighting technician in the back corner on a DMX controller. Like, people saw that we mean business. We're not going to be cut from the same cloth as the basic insert random name here guy who claims to make music. You have to stand apart. You have to set the tone. If you want to be respected, you got to give them something to respect.
Yo,
if you want to be taken seriously, you got to give them something to take serious.
How hard is that to do, though? Like, how hard is that for you to grab your child or your son, your daughter, whoever's rapping, right, or whoever's an artist? How hard is it for you to say, I'm going to put up a showcase just with them, maybe some friends, right, as support or whatever, but we might not make any cash off of this. So my investment might not give me the return on investment in the monetary form. How do you mentally prepare yourself for that? Because I see a lot of parents that will probably be like, man, you know, my son wants to be a rapper. I can't pay $2,000-$3,000 to rent a spot. I can't pay $2,000 for marketing. I'd rather take that $5,000 and send them to college. So how do you mentally get over the fear of, yo, we might not make any money this time or the next time?
Well, first of all, you got to establish your budget. Mm-hmm. You got to know what your budget is and what you can afford and what's not going to sink you. There's a lot of venues you can get for very cheap, or you can get it to where you guarantee X amount of people are going to be there. So the venue will make the bar, so you end up getting the venue for free. Uh-huh. So it's not that hard to grab a venue and do a show. It may not be the best looking venue, but whatever the case may be. And if you know, all right, listen, we want to do a show. This is what we want to do. Okay, we can't throw the show in 2 months because the money's not going to be there. So you got to start putting money to the side and prepare properly. Mm-hmm. And if you know you need $1,000 to get this show off the ground, or $1,500 to get this show off the ground, then you got to sit there and give yourself enough time to have that budget to where it's liquid funds, to where, okay, we put money to the side. This is what we're going to do. And now we want this much time to promote and really make sure that we get tickets sold and everything else. And you have to go into it with the game plan of hoping to break even. If you're going into it to try to make a profit, you're already going into it with the wrong mindset.
Okay.
You're going, now, this is what I mean by investing in yourself. Essentially, yeah, if you make a couple of dollars, that's dope. You're going to take that money, you're going to reinvest it anyway and put it back into the product. But at the end of the day, you have to invest in yourself in order to, before you can get others to invest in you. Yeah. Now, it's not that easy. People say, yo, how hard is it to sell a $10 ticket or a $20 ticket? You need to understand, in today's day and age, people are paying their bills. So if they're taking $20 out of their pocket, they might be taking $20 off their electric bill or saying, you know what, I'm going to bring lunch to work in and I can't afford lunch this day. You're taking money that they have allocated for something else and deciding, I want to spend it on this instead. Mm-hmm. So you have to sell. Like, you really have to sell yourself and what you're doing. It's just like if you're opening a restaurant, you got a new burger you're trying to promote, you're going to give a few free ones away to get the taste out, and then let word of mouth start to work. And you're going to spend money on marketing and maybe a commercial or an Instagram ad, you know. So you have to build your core before you can even think of throwing your own show. Because I mean, if I just recorded a song today and I want to throw a show in a month, that doesn't make sense. You're not going to have the fan base. No one's going to buy a ticket. You have to have something worth selling before you can even venture into that. So once you establish a small fan base and everything else, and you put your work in, you pay your dues, you did a couple of paid performs for other promoters, and then you started getting the sum to where, okay, we're not going to charge you to perform, but you got to sell X amount of tickets and we'll give you a percentage off the tickets. Now you see, okay, I'm bringing this many people out to shows. Now you have the mindset, okay, we can get this venue for this. We know we can draw at least this many people in this ballpark. This is the budget. So preemptively, you already know, I can draw back this much. I can make this much money back on a minimum. That's your budget. Don't go above your means.
Yeah, don't gas yourself
up. You get
up.
You get a smaller venue. And like I said, if you want to take a little bit of extras to really sell it, so that way now you take this small venue and you make it lit. Like you really make it like a concert experience. And that's what we did. We took a small venue, Amendment 18 here on Staten Island. We went and got some lighting equipment. We rented. We paid a lighting engineer. The guy knew what he was doing. Got some fog machines and some, you know, real stage lighting, and threw it on that stage. So it's not just a typical yellow light in a regular small venue. And we made it appear way more than it really was.
That's the trick.
And
right
we packed
there.
It out.
Yeah.
And we packed it out. And then, you know, you got to stay on schedule. You got to really know what you're doing when you're running a show. There's time schedules that you got to be on. And that's where I come into play with event management and everything else. And I told him, I was like, listen, if this is something you really want to do, these are the type of situations you got to create for yourself. You know, it's just like any record label, they have a brand new artist, and yeah, they're known in their city, but they're not known to the masses. Now they got to show them to the world. So what do? They invest money in a concert. They invest money in production and stage lighting. And they usually pair them with a more known artist or multiple artists. So it is more of a fan base to be drawn in from multiple places. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to just throw a solo show, because it's just not going to work. You know, unless you're Drake,
yeah.
You know, then it's a different story. But when you're starting on the independent level, perception is everything, and people are going to be more inclined to share footage from something that looks amazing than just the regular same old thing that everyone else shares. When you go to these showcases or you go to these events, after a while it starts to become numb and blur. Like artist after artist after artist on these showcases, we were seeing it
over again. Yeah,
it's just a dude standing on the stage with a mic, and there's no production by it. There's no sell value. And they just all start to sound the same. You have to stand apart. How do you stand apart? You practice your craft. You practice on your performance quality. You practice on what you're going to do when you're on that stage. And you add lighting. You add smoke machines. You add mystique. Case in point, Travis Scott. You know Travis Scott, right?
Yeah. Yep, of course.
Okay. Everyone talked about his Governor's Ball performance a couple of years ago out here in New York. Mm-hmm. One thing you never heard anyone say was Travis Scott really sang the shit out of his lyrics.
No, it's all about the performance. All about the experience.
Everyone said, yo, did you see the lighting? Oh, did you see the roller coaster? Like, it was the production value. At the end of the day, you have to entertain. And you, like I said, if you're going to get someone to take $10, $20, $50, $100 out of their pocket and spend it on the ticket, it's because they know they're about to go see a show. It doesn't matter how great you say your lyrics. It has to be more to it, because I can hear your lyrics for 99 cents on iTunes. Why am I going to come out of my house and come see you and everything else? Because the performance is lit. It's an experience. You have to create an experience.
Yeah. So like with your son, right? Like, we all have like these really proud moments, right? Like, so right now he's on interviews, he's performing places, he's investing in his craft, actually perfecting his craft, right? What was one of those moments that made you the proudest as a dad and as a businessman when it comes to me?
Early on in his career, we did about two or three pay to performs. Someone was at one of those pay to performs and noticed him. And he was granted the opportunity to perform in the middle of Times Square.
Dope.
On a live stage in front of thousands. Mm-hmm. 3-4 months in.
That's insane.
And, you know, like, I'm a New Yorker first and foremost. So it's like, you know, this is dope. You know, you're in the middle of like the mecca of what we grew up in.
Yeah, it's home.
But you being from the Bronx, I'm from Staten Island, we all know Times Square.
Yeah.
You know, that's where the ball drops, all of that. And, you know, like, I had to take a moment to sit back and be like, you know what, I need to be a dad right now and soak this in. My son is on a stage in front of 7,000 people right now, and they don't know him from a hole in the wall, but they were all bopping their heads. And by the second song, they were saying his name. And by the second time, the third time he said the hook, they were singing the hook. That's amazing. That's a feel-good moment. That's as a dad and a businessman.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter.
That's a perfect moment.
It could have been a strange kid. You know, like, you put a lot, when you work for something and you put work into something and you see results, I don't care if you're the dad or just the guy in charge or the guy who put the belief and the investment in. That's amazing, bro. Like, that's amazing.
How did, you know, how did you keep his ego in check after that, bro?
Just telling him stories from the past and just explaining real life to him, like, where there's ups, there's downs. Where there's high points, there's going to be low points. You have to have a realistic approach. You know, not everyone's going to be a Justin Bieber to where they blow up off YouTube. And now the kid could go 5 years without doing anything and people still know his name and still care about him.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of people that have been big really fast and then disappeared just as fast. And they're still lucrative. They're still making, you know, they're still successful in the business. Like, for example, take Designer. Designer had that, you know, Panda record. It went crazy. Everyone, and then all of a sudden, he just faded away. Yeah. Little did people know, he's still making good money touring Europe and touring Japan, but his name isn't as popular anymore. Like, it was up, and then it was down. And people like him is the staple to show, like, listen, just because you are up doesn't mean you're going to stay up. You know, once you're up there, you got to work hard to keep it up.
Yeah, to stay up.
And you have to understand that there's going to be, it's a roller coaster. There's going to be rise and falls. And what makes you stronger is how much quicker you can get back up from a fall, how much quicker you can get back up from a disappointment. Because if you let the disappointments cater to your career, you're basically focusing on the negative. You're focusing on the downfalls. So how can you ever really get back up and focus on the back to the climb and elevating and staying up there if you're only letting the downfalls hit you?
So it takes a lot of communication, right? Like a lot of discussions, a lot of real life discussions as to these moments are dope, but it's not promised that you'll have the same moment tomorrow. So let's just keep working.
The best advice I can give when I say to him is, are you enjoying this moment right now? Mm-hmm. And he'll be like, yeah, I love it. I'll be like, remember what it took to get to this moment. Remember the 6 months before this.
Yeah.
And that keeps you humble.
And if you keep doing it, it'll keep reminding them that too. Where it's like sometimes a lot of parents, like, they'll say a line like that and say it once, you know what I mean, and then that's it, forget about it. And even me, like, I'm horrible at celebrating the small wins. And now with my own son, it's like, yo, I gotta keep repeating that the small wins matter, not just for him, but to also get me mentally prepared for those big wins, but also those small losses or those big losses.
Well, as a dad, you have to reinforce those small wins. Because the small wins, it's what I call the climb, the come up.
Yep.
The come up is the most fun. Once you get to where you're trying to be and you reach a goal, like, it's all right, cool, we made it. Now we got to sustain it. but the fun and just knowing, like, all right, listen, we just booked our first major show. This is dope. Like, this is what we put in this work for. This is the result of everything you busted your ass to do just now. Congratulations. I salute you. Like, you stuck with it. And you got to take those little mental small wins so that way they have validity to know why they're busting their ass and listening to you in the first place.
That's a fact. That's a fact. So now, as a dad and a manager, right? What do you think is the number one thing for somebody that's going to fast forward through the podcast and they just want to hear that one solid piece of advice? What is that one piece of advice that you would give a dad whose child wants to get into the music industry?
Be honest with them.
Okay. I love it.
Be honest with them. Case in point, my daughter, she wanted to go audition for American Idol. She was, started singing in the shower and all this stuff. She wasn't good. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I said, listen, if you want to go to American Idol, we can do that. But be prepared because you're not that good of a singer. You have to be honest with them.
And it hurts. Honestly, it hurts sometimes, bro.
Yeah. But you know what? We have to set the tone and say, listen, if you want to be, you could do vocal lessons, you could do this, you could do that. But honestly, it's not for you. Like, I don't think it's for you, but you have to say it without being so cold. You have to approach them, like, listen, I know you want to sing, but listen, there's a lot of work in it. You hear these other singers, it's not for you, but you got to focus on their strong points. Now, my daughter, her strong point was art. Like, she could draw, she could paint and everything else. And like, she had, like I said, she wanted to go to American Idol. And I said, listen, Simon Cowell's going to destroy you. Let's focus on your strong points. And I was honest with her and she respected it, because like I said, I didn't just say it as cold, but if you see the kid's got talent and you have to disconnect yourself as a parent for a second and look at it as an unbiased, unjudgmental, regular person and say, all right, this is something that I think has a chance.
And then give
and even if you, resources. Even if there's a little bit of doubt, it doesn't take much to just throw a little support.
Yeah,
let them see because
support don't cost anything either.
Everyone's got to take L's in order to grow. So if you support them, and they have a little bit of talent, and they have a little bit of ambition for it, and you can see the passion, support it a little bit. All right, here, try it. It doesn't hurt to try something.
No, it sure doesn't. So now, how do dads keep in contact with you and Migs? What's the best way to keep in contact with you guys or to find out information?
Our social medias on Instagram, pretty much everywhere, is like at Mike Loco, MikeLoco. Migs is at Migs718, MIGS718. And Instagram, you can get us all day. And my OCD is crazy, so I check all my messages.
I'll testify to that. I'll testify that to that. Mike is on point. He's checking all messages, all comments, everything.
But like I said, like you said, that one thing is just be honest. Be honest with your kid and be honest with yourself.
That's a fact, man. That's a fact.
And don't let your past predict your son's future or your daughter's future.
Yeah.
They're an individual.
I agree 100%, man. And that's, that's something that I strive to do with my kids all the time. Like, I know they have dreams. Some of those dreams are a little outlandish sometimes. But I'm still never going to kill that dream where I'm going to do what I can to either support it or help them build that dream. You know what I mean? Make it come true. Whether they take a L or not.
Teach them to have a backup plan. They always got to have a backup plan. So if this don't work, you got this to fall back on. They always got to have a safety net.
Always. Well, Mike, man, you killed this joint. I mean, you really showcase how dads can really impact the child from birth all the way to their career. We got dads out there ready to take these gems and help their kids become the next big thing. So thank you, bro. Without that, we need dads to tell dads the true story. You know what I mean? So thank you for your time.
No, for sure. And that's the reason why fatherhood is lit. That's plug to you.
That's right. That's right. And I didn't pay for that plug, man.
Nah, you never will either, man. I support what you do. And I think it's dope. I think it's a dope platform. And I want to see more fathers and mothers just embracing their kids and being a part of their lives instead of letting the digital and social media run their kids' lives. That's we got to take more we got to stand up more on our own and be physically involved with our children. And so I salute everyone that supports you and what you're doing, and all the parents that step up to be a part of their kids' lives. Like, it's crucial. They are our future. Like, it's cliche, but they are our future, and we need to mend that.
That's a fact, man. That's why I do it. You know, as always, y'all know what to do. Make your presence felt. We matter. Fatherhood is lit.